Crosswires, navigating news with faith with Father Daniel Brandenburg, LC, and Chris McDonald. Crosswires, today's secular news stories viewed through a Catholic lens, from a layman's questions and a clergyman's reaction. Now, here's Chris and Father Daniel.
Welcome, Father Daniel. Nice to see you. Looks like you got your summer tan going on.
Oh, I try to get outside frequently, so I got a little bit of tan going, playing some disc golf out in the park.
Which I have played with you, and you're very good at that.
Well, frustratingly, as with all types of golf, you know, sometimes I play well and sometimes I don't. But hey, that's part of life.
We'll start this week with a Wall Street Journal op-ed arguing in favor of lowering the drinking age in the United States to 18. So as you know, sure, most European countries have a legal drinking age of 18 years. In Denmark, it's as young as 16, as long as there's a responsible guardian nearby.
Mm-hmm.
So the op-ed theme was that the current law is not a deterrent, has these negative cultural effects, particularly on college campuses where, sure, binge drinking is so common. So beer used to be the original beverage of choice on colleges, on college campuses, and it's kind of faded away to where vodka is now the preferred poison. And with the advent,
cheaper and faster,
correct, and easier to smuggle into the dorm room,
right?
Less, you know, less bulky.
Mm-hmm.
So with the advent of Uber and the decreased drunk driving risk, which were the, that was the reason why the drinking age was raised from,
sure,
18 to 21 in most states, or in every state now, is it time to revisit this? Was what the op-ed was asking. So, you know, you got the obvious traditional arguments that a person can be drafted and sent to war at 18, but they can't drink a beer.
Right.
So the common notion is that American youth consume more alcohol in a bad way, i.e. binge drinking,
yes,
than their European counterparts.
Mm.
But the data actually show that European youth actually drink more and have more problematic patterns of drinking than their American youth counterparts. So what's your thoughts about the drinking age?
Well, you bring up a great topic, Chris, and I think this is a good example of, just on a macro level, of how we need to dialogue on things where circumstances can change over time, and something that may have been the best course of action 30 years ago or 50 years ago or whenever it was established, now it might make more sense for it to change. And it's good to, for us to have dialogue in society about these issues. So closing that chapter on the macro view, on this specific issue of the drinking age, I want to tell you a funny story. So I studied for 8 years in Rome in Italy, and I worked with a group of chierichetti, which are altar servers. And on one occasion, one of the families invited me over for a Sunday lunch. Beautiful, and you go to an Italian family for a lunch or dinner. It's a whole affair. And they had prepared for this American seminarian who was coming over, and 5-course meal. And on the counter was a very ceremoniously placed 2-liter bottle of Coca-Cola. And so we're having our meal, and they're serving out the wine and the different courses. And then about halfway through the meal, the mom goes over to the countertop, and she unscrews the top of the Coca-Cola bottle, and she comes over to serve me a glass of Coca-Cola. And she said, "Brother, would you like some Coca-Cola?" And to be honest, Chris, I know this is dangerous because we're in Atlanta, but I don't even like Coca-Cola, okay? I grew up drinking Pepsi. But she offered me Coke, and I didn't want to refuse it because I could tell that she would put a lot of thought into this, offering Coca-Cola to the American. And she serves me a glass of Coca-Cola and then takes the bottle back and puts the cap back on, puts it back on the counter. And as she's walking back, I can hear her son, who's one of my little altar servers, he's 11 years old, kind of calls his mom over and says, "Mom, can I have some Coca-Cola too?" And his mom whispers back to him, "No, you know it's not good for you. Now shut up and drink your wine." So yeah, there is a different appreciation for alcohol and drinking in other cultures. And I think that the taboo that we placed upon it somewhat artificially in the United States of 21 as the drinking age has created among young people this sense of, I want to cross that boundary, which has led to a lot of binge drinking. So I think it's a good topic for us to debate, see the pros and cons, and see where we should go as a society.
well, if she really wanted to do an American meal and make you feel welcome, she should have done a chili cheese dog with some Cheetos.
Now, that would have been pretty amazing.
But regarding the drinking age, I do have this sense that the forbidden fruit element makes...
Oh, without it, a doubt.
So much more likely that kids would go to the hard liquor.
Yes.
And, you know,
and to the extremes, and they're going to show that they're a rebel because they can drink more. I was just having a conversation a couple of days ago with a 21-year-old who actually got into a significant amount of problem in college because he was drinking too much. And there's some alcoholism that runs in his family, and he was becoming an alcoholic. And he realized, you know, Father, I need to stop doing that. And as he's grown in maturity, realizes how silly it was, but it's gotten him into trouble. And
well, there's I think that that's element happening a lot to a lot of people. You know, drinking while the developing brain is still developing,
right,
is...
It affects you more.
Right. But on the other hand, you know, drinking is not immoral. I mean, God...
Not right. per se. When it becomes the binge drinking or getting drunk... Then it becomes problematic because you're taking away your freedom and the greatest gift that we have. St. Thomas Aquinas says that corruptio optima pessima, which means the corruption of the best is the worst. And when we diminish our capacity and our freedom by drinking and losing our inhibitions, that's very problematic. But drinking, you know, having a drink here, there in social setting and just part of, you know, conversing with people, not a problem at all.
Well, if you go to another Catholic theologian, I love G.K. Chesterton's quote, one's too many, two's just right, three's not enough. that's the problem drinking.
Yes, that is often the challenge.
Crossed Wires. If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
In the year 2021, the FDA made mifepristone, which is not to be confused with the Plan B morning after pill, available by mail when they said you no longer need a doctor's visit to obtain it.
Mm-hmm.
The U.S. Fifth Circuit Appellate Court recently ordered the FDA to pause the allowing of distribution of mifepristone by mail, but the Supreme Court issued a stay of that ruling and left the mail availability in place for now. An opinion piece in the Wall Street Journal argues the lack of an in-person dispensing requirement has made it easier for a father who doesn't want his child to obtain abortion pills through the mail and administer them without the mother's knowledge or consent, such as putting them into her food or drink. Women across the country claim that this is in fact what's happening. I had no idea about this angle of it. Hmm. So a Tarrant County, Texas man was charged in February with attempted capital murder for allegedly giving cookies containing abortion-inducing medication to his then-girlfriend with the intent of killing her unborn baby. An Illinois man faces intentional homicide charges for allegedly administering abortion drugs to his girlfriend without her knowledge. A doctor in surgical residency in Ohio was indicted in December for allegedly using his estranged wife's identity to obtain abortion drugs and then holding his pregnant girlfriend down while forcing crushed abortion pills into her mouth.
Wow.
There are so many angles of heartbreak to any abortion, but in reading about this article, and about this issue, one thing that struck me was I oftentimes will read the comments to these articles,
yeah.
And then there are ones that will also elicit letters to the editor, which they publish. So one of the letters to the editor was in response to this was where this one woman was writing that she agreed that a return to basic medical standards was absolutely necessary. She recalls her story of getting pills from Planned Parenthood, who told her that the abortion would be like a heavy period and that she would barely notice.
Mm-hmm.
She says that when she passed the amniotic sac, she was traumatized to see her recognizable baby's tiny body being flushed down the toilet and has ever since had PTSD. So it's just heartbreaking when you think about that. And you think about all the couples who are struggling to conceive and how much more common it is nowadays to have a difficult time conceiving because of the long-term oral contraceptive use as well as getting married later or whatever. So, you know, first of all, what do you think about this? Did you have any idea that men might be using abortion drugs to
You know, no, that's actually the first I've heard of it, but it makes perfect sense because in so many cases of abortion, it's really not, it's a woman who's feeling a lot of pressure, either from society around her or from a parent or from a boyfriend or a husband. And that's really, really unfortunate, of course, because they have a moral culpability in pushing that abortion upon a woman. Most women have an innate sense of the life that is within them. And part of the feminine genius is to care for life. And so that's why it's so contrary to a woman's very nature to carry out an abortion. And it's why it traumatizes them so deeply. I mean, I hear confessions, and I've heard, unfortunately, many times the confession of abortion. And there's nothing that traumatizes a woman as deeply as taking the life of her own child.
And surely you also counsel couples that are having trouble and difficulty conceiving.
Of course.
Right? And yeah. So these two are, you know, there's an obvious answer here, right?
Yes. It's not so obvious to some people, and it is difficult. It's difficult for a mother to give up her child for adoption, but it's much easier than to kill her own child. But going back to the question here, which is this medication and the availability of medication, which is so contrary to, basic medical practice. I mean, you have to get a prescription for, you know, simple drugs like even amoxicillin, you know, to right. antibiotics to be able to treat, bacterial infection or something. And then we have this ease with you can receive through the mail something that is so traumatic, has caused the death of, I don't know how many dozens or hundreds of women it is now, because they say it's a safe procedure. It's not safe. People are dying from this.
But for this reason alone, it should not be available by mail, that someone might be unknowingly taking through a cookie that they bake the chemicals into.
Yeah.
For that reason alone, it shouldn't be available by mail. I mean, there's a ton of other reasons, but...
And it's clear that this was it was legalized and was made available because of ideological pressure. And I think we need to return to a basic, standard of care that is for all medicine.
Crossed Wires. If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
The Wall Street Journal says sex worker rights have become a rallying cry on the cultural left. No longer derided as hookers or harlots, the sex worker is a free market operative like any other. Sex work is work, says those who see prostitution as a form of choice, empowerment, and bodily autonomy. From the Academy Awards to TikTok to gender studies seminars, any suggestion that prostitution is something shameful is dismissed as moralistic pearl clutching. British comedian John Oliver equates sex work with making sandwiches at Subway. And in a new Apple TV series called Margo's Got Money Troubles, OnlyFans is a perfectly fine way to pay the bills. Whereas traditionally, women's rights organizations viewed prostitution as a form of commercial sexual exploitation, the new framework means that prostitutes aren't victims, they're trailblazers. What about this thought? That if a person can get paid to have sex on camera for pornography, then what is the difference legally, not morally, if they get paid for sex off camera? Pornography. I guess what I'm getting at is if prostitution is illegal, pornography should be illegal.
Duh.
Right.
I mean, what more do you want me to say, Chris? I mean, yeah, from a moral perspective and from a societal perspective, I mean, this is just a nonsensical. We've lost our moral compass.
Do you agree with that premise that sex on camera and sex off camera, what's the difference? You're getting paid for one. The other is illegal. If one's legal, they both should be. But they both ought to be, from our standpoint, illegal because they are morally.
All right. So let's go back to something that St. Augustine says. He makes a distinction between that which is immoral and illegal, which you're trying to make as well, which I agree with. Okay, there's things that are clearly immoral. Both prostitution and pornography are immoral. They don't respect the dignity of the human person, don't respect the nature of the intimacy of sexuality, of the marital connection, all of those things, okay? So they should both be they're clearly immoral. They should be illegal. If a society has a clear sense of natural law and of what's good for the human person. But in some cases, and particularly in the United States, pornography is viewed as a free speech issue. which it is not. But anyway, that's how it's.
But am I giving
framed.
A false equivalence to the two?
No, I don't think so. Personally, I don't think so. But I think there's another element that comes into play, and this is what's in the argument that St. Augustine makes. He says that there are certain evils in society that it is more difficult to get rid of than it's worth the effort, or that it's really impossible to get rid of completely. And so we have to, in a sense, he uses the word tolerate. Now, this is not the way that we use toleration in today's society. We talk about toleration as just relativism.
That we have to tolerate legally.
Yes. Not
Never
legally.
Tolerate
not
morally.
Not legally. Or morally, but toleration in the sense that St. Augustine uses is realize we're never going to get rid of prostitution completely. And he uses the example of prostitution.
Because it's the oldest profession.
It is, unfortunately. And there's a sexual drive in every man and every woman. And so, you know, one thing leads to another over and over again. He says the effort to completely extirpate prostitution is, in a certain sense, quixotic. And so let's not fully engage in that. We can make it illegal. We know it's immoral. But, you know, in a certain sense, we have to kind of put up with it, knowing that it's an evil. This is the sense of a toleration that's different in St. Augustine and in our modern society. Then in modern society, we just say there's no good or evil. It's just relativism. What St. Augustine is saying is that it's a known evil, but that we know we can't fully get rid of it. So we're going to fight against it. We're going to do what we can to push that aside. But at the end of the day, it's going to continue.
Which is kind of how we've treated pornography. No one ever talks about making it illegal.
Well, some people do.
Well, but not in the general discourse. I mean, you know.
Not in the United States.
Not in the United States.
Not in the United States, because we have an exaggerated sense of free speech and freedom, which is not healthy. In Europe and many other places around the world, they have repression of freedom and of free speech, which is not healthy. But we have an exaggeration of the sense of freedom in the United States, which is not based on natural moral law. So I would make a case that, yeah, we should make illegal pornography. Who is it helping? It's not helping anyone. It's leading people into addiction. It's denigrating women. It's cheapening the beauty of sex. I mean, there's so many negatives that come from pornography. I would make a case we should make it illegal.
Crossed Wires.
If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
Let's talk about a Texas senatorial candidate and the somewhat different appeal he seems to have with the left-leaning voting populace.
Okay.
The National Review profiles James Tallarico, the man running for a U.S. Senate seat in Texas, and examines how progressive political ideology can be packaged in religious framing. Unlike many popular left-leaning figures who find religion to be meaningless, Tallarico is an active member of St. Andrew's Presbyterian Church in Austin, Texas. Among the things their pastor espouses are narratives about America's founding that he believes aren't rooted in Christianity. The leaders promote the idea, the leaders of this church promote the idea that the United States has fundamentally corrupt roots, primarily in the unjust acquisition of Native American lands and enslavement of Black Americans. The congregation avoids feudal language for God, not using the words Lord or King. They use the word kingdom instead of kingdom because it represents an egalitarian realm and emphasizes our familial relationship with each other. They use a version of the Bible they call the inclusive Bible, and they write hymns, or they rewrite hymns, to use more inclusive language.
Wait a second. Don't you think they should be called hers instead of hymns? I mean, if we're going to get ridiculous, we may as well rename the songs.
Yeah. Well, they have a genderless conception of God, calling God non-binary, not male. At the heart of St. Andrew's teachings are what they described as a values-based system rather than belief-based, emphasizing broad ethical teachings from Scripture while downplaying doctrinal specifics. the magazine.
So basically, they are gutting the gospel and coming just going with whatever the culture around us.
They're
says.
Going. They're replacing the who and why of Jesus with the what of Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
They're replacing the reality of the resurrection and the incarnation and the whole
and all
salvation
the teachings of Jesus.
And all the teaching. Well, yeah. No, what they're saying is that the love, inclusion, and justice part of Jesus is what matters. Not
so they're picking and choosing.
They're picking and choosing, and so by making universal love their organizing principle, they're subordinating the moral order of natural law that God put into our DNA mm-hmm. and made discoverable by us through reason.
So they're making a religion in their own image and likeness.
And they're inverting the classical order.
Yeah.
And I find it interesting, right, because I actually was just recently with my daughter's friends. They're all from Austin, Texas. And I asked what they thought of Tallarico, and he really does appeal. These are folks who are generally right-leaning, mm-hmm. but because of his bringing in the religious
veneer.
You know, he's mm-hmm. become, and particularly for the guy that he's running against, the Republican Ken Paxton, he's really not a good guy.
Mm.
Okay. He's got some real baggage.
Mm.
And so it's just making it a lot easier for people who are on the fence or, you know, independent to go to this guy because of this framing of things in the religious
right.
perspective. So, well, I don't know. What do you think?
I mean, there's a lot of things I think. I mean, I think that there's always a problem when people turn away from the fullness of the gospel message and want to make it in their own image and likeness. I think that's always going to be a problematic reality throughout history. We've also talked about, you know, the tendency within Marxism to become its own religion. There are many efforts throughout history where people have used the gospel or used religion for their own nefarious purposes, for their own political advancement. And this just seems to me like another case of that. And I think back to cases in other places around the country and other times in history, there's a common pattern here. I think you have to take the fullness of the truth in the gospel and let it challenge you and not merely become part of the society around us.
So, yeah, when religion is values-based rather than belief-based.
What does that even mean?
It means that the creed, we have a framework that defines our religion.
And, so and they says, would just jettison the Apostles' Creed and the Nicene Creed?
Well, that's what
creed.
I'm saying is that's what our religion is about. And in the matter of who Jesus was and where he came from, all of that matters. Otherwise, he's just a nice guy who had a good message.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what they're, I think, preaching is that, you know, be nice. But they don't worry about being truthful.
Well, yeah, well, it's be nice according to their criteria.
Right.
Why are their criteria any better than any other?
And that's just the same thing we're wrestling with in today's politics because folks on the left they have good intentions.
Yeah, but I think there's another broader issue that comes up again and again here in the realm of politics. Do you choose your politicians by how nice they are or by how effective they are? And I think this is a real problem for a lot of people because most people in our society are making decisions based on emotional connection. And that's why I was talking with someone the other day about Trump derangement syndrome, that it's a reality. I mean, there are some people who just hear the guy speak and they shut down. They can't hear anything that he says. They can't look at his policies. They look at his past as like, oh, you know, he was a womanizer or he did this or did that. At the end of the day, though, when a person is going to do a job, let's just take it out of the realm of politics for a moment. If I've got someone who I want to wash my car, do I want the person who is, you know, checks all the boxes for DEI or someone who can wash my car well? I want someone who's going to wash the car well. When it comes to politics, do I want someone who's a nice guy or someone who puts in place good policies that are going to be good for the country? I want someone who's going to put in place good policies that are good for the country. And so I think this is where it gets muddy. And I think we have to be clear-sighted when it comes to choosing our political candidates, who we vote for. Are they going to put in place policies which are good for the country? In a certain sense, I mean, from a moral perspective, yeah, I do care about what their how they live their life and what decisions
because they are so public that they're the rest of their life is an example for others.
It is
not
it
just
is.
The way that
and
they vote on policy.
And ideally, we should have candidates who are living an upright and good life. But if I have to choose between a nice guy and someone who's got good policy, I'll take the guy with good policy every time.
Crossed Wires.
If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
Unrealistic beauty standards have long saddled women and girls, but increasingly men and boys are facing their own heightened images of perfection. And the Wall Street Journal reports that an increasing number of boys and men are injecting themselves with peptides that promise to give you a tan or lose weight or grow muscle.
Okay, I haven't heard of that. What are peptides actually?
I don't even know. But
it's like,
you know,
sort of chemical.
Yeah, I know that, like, the GLP, the Ozempics, that's a form of peptides.
And, okay.
Right? This would not be anabolic steroids, I don't think. I don't know what the definition is, but the broader point is that there's a lot more men and boys who are, you know, concerned with things like traditionally a lot of younger women would have been concerned about, you know, injecting things so that they have a more full-looking pec, mm-hmm. you know, instead of doing it the hard way.
So these peptides are helping them to be tanned and to be muscular?
Yes.
Okay.
All right. So I guess where I want to go with this is that the church has a stance about respecting our bodies.
Yes.
And the church teaches that we have bodies, that we don't have bodies, that we are bodies created in the image and likeness of God. So we don't have bodies.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So
we're body, soul, unity. Yeah.
Okay. So popes have generally said, you know, bodily enhancement is acceptable when it's for the right intention,
mm-hmm.
right? So I guess where I'm going to ask you here is, if it's okay for girls to put makeup on and to, you know, beautify themselves in a certain way with artificial things, then what's the difference for boys doing the same thing? And is it just using hair care products, or when you're actually changing your body by injecting yourselves with peptides, is that where the problem starts to arise?
Mm-hmm. Sure. Well, I think you have to be careful. What is the long-term effect of these substances? If it's not damaging the human body long-term or short-term, you could use it like you would use other beauty products. But I think you can go back to a deeper question. You know, is makeup necessary? Are certain things we do to beautify our body, what's the intention in that?
It's not necessary, but it's okay. It's fine.
It's okay. St. Paul talks a little bit about that. He says the natural beauty that women have is not something that we necessarily need to cover over. So I think there's an interesting, deeper conversation that we could have about these topics.
If there's a topic you'd like Father Daniel to address, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
Thanks for joining us. We'll be back again next week with a different take on the news.
This has been Crossed Wires, navigating news with faith, with Father Daniel Brandenburg, LC, and Chris McDonald. Today's secular news stories viewed through a Catholic lens on AM 1160, The Quest.